The Bible says, be not deceived. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap.
All right, it's 4 p.m. on Wall Street. Do you know where your money is?
Welcome to Financial Issues, where we align reality with truth. Conservative talk radio you can count on. Financial issues that you need to know.
We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
We will simply apply to government the common sense that we all use in our daily lives.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celia.
Good morning. Welcome back to Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It is great to be here. Thank you for being with us. We got a little bit of economic data coming out. Lots happening that is non-eventful, but nonetheless, we'll talk a little bit about what's happening there. All the indices in negative territory right now. The oil is up 1.25%. So pretty big move up. It looks like it's headed towards 74. 74.91 right now. I said, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, it was the beginning of the month. I wouldn't be surprised if we see $75 barrel oil by the end of the month. I didn't know it would be on the very last day of the month and wasn't even sure it would happen. It's not going to happen to 75, but it looks like we're headed towards 74, at least right now in the intraday trading. We'll see how it closes tonight. Right now, the Dow is down slightly. Everything's down slightly, just kind of flatlined right now. And of course, yesterday, as we, you know, look at the markets and where we were, everything was positive. All the indices were positive yesterday. Not a whole lot, just barely positive. But anything in the green yesterday was a record high for the S&P and the NASDAQ since they hit record highs on Monday. So anything in the green is another record high. So this is the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. And it's going to be pretty much the same today because they were only up 0.3% on the S&P and under 0.25%, about 0.8% for the NASDAQ. So we'll see what happens. It looks like oil stocks year-to-date continue to be the big gainers, energy sector doing very well. And we'll see what all that looks like and how that shapes up. There's a lot of conversation today in and around on a couple of things. And one of the things that I find a little bit laughable, but I'll talk about it anyway. But before I do that, let me just mention that a very popular measure of inflation came out yesterday. And yesterday afternoon. And so one of the inflation indexes that some like to look at, and I must admit I like to look at it as well, although I've never placed a lot of value in it because it has frankly been wrong too many times for me to place a lot of value in it. And I would say right now it is definitely wrong because it's not logical right now. It is strictly a metrics that is based on a certain aspect of measure for inflation. And it's simply put, we look at the 5-year yield and we look at the 10-year yield. So the spread between the 5 and 10 year and at their highest level and the increase or the level of inflation, the difference between that 5 and 10 year yield compared to the difference in inflation, that's the spread that we're looking at, can oftentimes give us some indication of where we are in a cycle. of inflation. I'm trying not to get too deep in the weeds here because there's really no need for it, but it's hard for me to explain it without getting too detailed. So I'm going to leave it at that. So the 5 year is at about 2.4%. The 10 year is about 2.3%. The average of that is about where inflation is right now. That's the break-even point. So it indicates that markets are seeing inflation now over a long time frame falling as opposed to increasing. I can't place a lot of importance on that or a lot of priority as we think about inflation and how that's going to impact the markets. I don't think that I don't want to say it's inaccurate. It is just another metric that is the break-even rate between yield and inflation, but I'm not going to place a whole lot of emphasis on it. But right now, there may be traders saying full speed ahead right now. The risk trade or the trading in general is on again, and they might be starting to see or drive the market up and maybe having second thoughts about buying in to this talk of inflation. I think what Wall Street does with this metric is probably going to be more important than the metric itself. We don't know what that's going to look like. I won't know for a couple of weeks, but we'll see how that shapes up. Some economists are also saying that elevated inflation is going to compel the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates at least twice in 2023. Listen, we are either going, the Federal Reserve is either going to raise rates by the end of this year or early first half of next year. I don't think they're going to be waiting till 2023. I think that's off the table right now. But that's what a lot of them are saying. Of course, if they were to rate, yes, it's a pretty good estimate they're going to raise rates at least twice in 2023. Again, I'm not in that camp. So we'll see how it goes. They're trying desperately, as you can tell from these two things I just went over, they're really trying to put a blanket over inflation, a wet blanket. They're really trying to calm the fears and the nerves down. Because if they don't calm everything down and it continues to run up, the Fed's going to come step in sooner than traders would like him to step in. And they're trying to avoid that at all costs. So I think a lot of this is somewhat of a propaganda or some hype in reference to inflation. That's just my opinion. Okay, so the bipartisan infrastructure deal reached by the president last weekend. Senators would not only add to economic growth, but listen to this. This is the laughable part. But they believe that it's going to lower the national debt. According to a new study from the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School that despised Trump and his big time in the tank, like all the other academic institutions for Biden, researchers, of course, they weren't swayed, are saying that the additional $579 billion in new infrastructure spending is going to increase domestic output enough to decrease the debt by 1% by 2050. That has to be one of the more comical things that I've seen in a very long time. All right, 610-363-1110. We'll be right back. way, our phone lines are open, 610-363-1110. So I just think it's, so here's what they're saying. Yeah, we're going to cut the deficit by 2050. I want to know what they use for a calculation between now and 2050 to possibly even in their wildest imaginations and the most skewed mathematics that you could ever come up with could believe that by 2050, we're going to be cutting or will have decreased our national debt. It is lunacy. It doesn't matter who's president. There's no way on God's green earth that we are going to be cutting our deficit in the next 20 years, 30 years, not going to, in the next 5 years, that we would have to freeze spending. All spending would have to totally freeze and taxes would have to go up through the roof. So it is a ridiculous statement. And they come out and make it even more ridiculous by saying researchers at the Wharton School, researchers, who did they use? Political scientists to do the research? It wasn't done through statistical and mathematical data, that is for sure. It's insane. And this is the kind of garbage that gets put out on the state-run media on a regular basis. And that's all this is. This is just another soundbite for the left to carry on. They were running low on soundbites coming out of what might be perceived as reputable institutions. So now when they get on TV, you will hear it now for the next 3 weeks. Well, according to the Wharton School of Business, the University of Pennsylvania, this infrastructure bill is actually going to cut the deficit. I mean, that's what you're going to be hearing about. So they've got some cover by a so-called credible source. Now, if they had credibility, they don't anymore. But this is the soundbite that we're going to be hearing. And I think it's just insanity. And they really don't care, number one, about cutting the deficit. Nobody cares. This is to pander to that base that's straddling the fence that doesn't know where they are with all this. That's all this is. This is trying to appeal to that base. Well, you can say all you want about the president, but he's cutting the deficit. Okay. So when the debt clock starts running backwards, let's praise the president. Okay. So when we look at the debt clock and it's ticking backwards, that'd be great. Now, President Obama shut the debt clock down for 8 months. So we don't really know how accurate that clock is because we certainly kept on spending for that 8 months. So I don't know. I just find it so hard to believe. I don't know where I got it. I'm thinking I pulled this from the Wall Street Journal this morning. I'm not sure. But so, you know, I pulled it from a source that is a credible source, but the source itself has to be checking their credibility. There are a lot of other people checking their credibility right now because I don't know how it's possible. But it was published. Supreme Court yesterday removed a hurdle to construct a natural gas pipeline from Pennsylvania through New Jersey. This is a huge win because for the oil industry, the Supreme Court is saying, you know, the ruling on the pipeline developer that was originally started this, that they filed the suit against, could invoke the power of the federal government to take state property needed for the project. So they're saying that ruling that the lower court made to stop the pipeline is basically going to invoke the local or state governments or the federal government as well could just confiscate property in order to do this pipeline. And they gave it a non, they're not ruling, they didn't rule to allow this to happen. So that's good news. U.S. home prices are surging faster, on a faster pace than ever in April. The limited numbers of homes and the markets being pushed by lower interest rates, booming housing records, and the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index measured the average home price in major metropolitan areas rose by 14.6%. I talked about this yesterday, and that's up from 13.3%. Home prices on average surge, and they say the average median home price is $350,000, just topping $350,000 for the first time ever. And it rose in the month of May, the price rose in the month of May 24%. The increase was around 13% higher from last time. But if we look at the month of May, we're up about 24%. So we're topping $350,000 for an average price of a home. Wow. Pretty amazing. 610-363-1110. If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do it. 610-363-1110. Also, debt to GDP ratios around the world. This is according to the Bank of International Settlements. I get their information. I like their information because it is usually information that no one else reports about. Things like derivatives and credit default swaps and failures of such and other areas of the economy. One of the areas that they look at on a fairly regular basis is debt ratios to GDP from major economies. Now, China leading the pack. But I'll talk about those ratios in the next hour. So pretty interesting as we watch this and we look through all of this. Let me go to phone 610-363-1110, 610-363-1110. Also, if you're watching on the website, you can go there and put your question up. Also, the real big news is, and for us anyway, not for you, most of you didn't maybe notice, but I had a call about it yesterday. Somebody, they couldn't get the app. Our Android app was off the Google site. It is back up again as of last night. So you can now, if you have an Android phone, you can go back and reload or load if you don't have it at all. If you had it, you could still listen through the app. If you didn't have it, you couldn't download it. You can now download it. So go, if you have an Android phone, you can go to your app store and type in FISM and download the app. So that is up and running once again, thankfully. I was extremely stressed over this because, you know, I know a lot of people, I got a lot of emails, and a lot of people are trying to download the app. And you know, we're trying to get everybody, more and more people on this app, and they couldn't get it. It's up and running again now. So if you have an Android, the Apple app didn't get pulled, which is generally the other way around. But so that's good. That's good news. So everything is straight and we're good. We're good to go there. All right. 610-363-1110. Let me go to Victor. Victor's calling us from California. Hey, Victor.
Good morning, Dan. Thank you, God. God bless you. Thank God for you are chart, compass, and anchor. For those of us. So anyways, quick, here's the deal. One of our pastors has four little girls, and trying to raise four little girls on a pastor's salary, and one of them was born with a heart defect. So anyways, some of us at the church got together. We were going to put together, I don't know, $25,000, $30,000 to start some kind of a a kids fund or whatever, and they started talking, and I said, "Per Dan, we don't want to have anything to do with woke stocks. We're at Per Dan Celia. We're going to go with Timothy Fund, and that's as far as we got."
Okay.
So
that's a good stat.
I called Timothy, spoke with someone very helpful, Steve over there. He said, "Yes, we can do this. Do we need a lawyer?"
I don't think you do. You're going to put it in the name of the pastor, I guess, right? Or you're going to put
Do not put it in the name of the kids. So yes. Go ahead. Sorry.
I think that you need to get the account set up and just put that in the name of the pastor. You'll need his Social Security number. And I would put that money, I would probably use the ETFs. How old's his oldest child?
Oldest is about 11, 12. Youngest is 2.
Okay. Yeah, I would look at using the ETFs, probably. I think that might make more sense. Timothy themselves can't sell the ETFs because they're like a stock, even though they're their funds. I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's just the way the regulations work. So, but you'd have to set an account up at a Fidelity or something like that. For him to do that. So that's up to you. But the Timothy funds, I would probably use, if you use the mutual funds, I would want you to use the large mid-cap growth fund and with a little bit in the fixed income fund. If you use the ETFs, I would tell you to put 50% in TPLC, that's the symbol, Timothy Plan Large Cap ETF, LC, and then about 20% in TPHD, and the balance of that I would put in 30% TPHD. The other 20% I'd split between TPIF and TPSC. I'll put you on hold, Victor, just in case you have a follow-up right up against the break. We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back. 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. I was talking to Victor in California. By the way, our phone lines are open if you want to queue your call up. Victor, I just want to see if you had a follow-up question, but I think
thank you. Very useful already. In case they don't want to go through the ETF, because I think you said they're going to have to open up a Fidelity account or something.
Correct.
If they want to stick with Timothy.
Yes.
And then I mentioned there's such a thing as an Israel fund, and the eyes lit up. Oh, we can invest in the state of Israel. So. Yeah. What sort of allocation on Timothy exclusively do you think?
So I would do 10% in the Israel fund for now. I wouldn't do any more than that. I'm a little concerned about the shekel and what is happening there, but I think I would start with 10%. For sure in the Israel fund, I would put 20% in the fixed income fund. I think that would be good. And the other, I would put, 40% in their large mid-cap growth. And I would put the other 30% in their large mid-cap value fund. And I think that'll give you a really good portfolio. It is leaning a little bit. So if aggressive is a 10 and not aggressive at all is a one. I think that makes the portfolio, this portfolio, around a 5.5, maybe 6. So it's not overly aggressive, but it's where it should be for children, of that age. And ideally that the some people would get together and maybe every once in a while make some contributions to it. You know, even if it's $100 every once in a while, that will help that account dramatically if they would do that. Or you all would do that. Yep.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Dan, thank you.
Victor, I'm glad you called. What a great thing you're doing. It's wonderful. And I hope some people participate willfully and cheerfully in doing that. Thank you.
God yep. bless. God bless. Thank you.
You're welcome. Great stuff. 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110.
Dan, it is really cool to hear what Victor's doing for his pastor. Just amazing encouragement for us as members of churches to lift up our local pastors.
Yeah, that is for sure. Yeah. And, you know, it is the frustrating part to me is that we have to do that for pastors.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't understand the mentality of churches that want generosity from their congregation, but yet they're not generous with their pastors. And I think that I think it doesn't please God. You know,
absolutely.
And there's a lot of older churches that just, well, you know, you're doing the Lord's work and, you know, what could be better than that? Well,
right.
Yeah, but you still got to eat.
Yeah.
And you got to provide for your family, you know? And, so it's a wonderful thing. I mean, I hear about that and I can remember years ago, having opportunities to write charitable trust or charitable gift annuities for people that did it for their pastors, for the pastor's retirement, you know. And it's great that guys like Victor are come to that recognition, you know, that they need to do that and gather a group. And that is so encouraging. It is a
sure
blessing.
Is.
Yeah, it is a blessing to hear that kind of stuff because we need more of that. But it's just a shame when you look at it, you know, that it happens. I don't know. That's another one of those things that just needs to change in Christendom, I think.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right.
And then, I know churches that are like paying. They could have the worst pastor in the world, and he ain't going anywhere because he's making more money he ever dreamed to make. So,
absolutely,
you know, I've seen that too. That's not
for
good.
For sure.
Yeah.
You need to pay pastors what they're worth, definitely.
Right.
But
yeah.
If he's
right.
a good pastor, if he's a faithful pastor. You're exactly right. He's got to put food on his table.
Exactly.
Yep.
It's funny. Good stuff. Anyway, 610-363-1110. I think we've got some economic data that is out this morning. Did you, Seth, if you get a chance, take a look at ADP numbers.
Yes. Actually, Dan, we do have those out now.
Oh, you do? Okay.
So this is for the month of June. This is the ADP employment. The previous month was 886,000. It was projected at 550,000. And the actual numbers came in at 692,000. Yeah.
What was it? 600?
Yeah, it was a 692,000.
Okay. Well, that's good. They were expecting, I think, 543, right? So.
Yeah, something around there. It was right around 550 that they were expecting. So,
that's good. So we'll see what happens with the number on Friday, which is the non-farm payrolls number coming out of the government. And right now, that number is estimated to be 683. So 1,000. So see if that happens. That would be a good thing. And of course, tomorrow we get first-time unemployment claims. So we'll see.
Yeah.
At 10 o'clock, we get pending home sales numbers. So we'll try to get a look and see what that's going to be as well.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. I lost my software here. Nope. Okay. All right. Let me get to... Here we go. So markets opened in positive territory. It's good news. Oil really came down almost a full, not quite, but over 3/4 of 1%. It dropped back. It's still in positive territory, but it's only up 0.6%. So good news there. Oil's at 73.48. Right now, so we did see that pullback, which was good to see. We needed that, so that's where oil is right now. All right, and if you want to queue your question, call up or your comment up on our website or on Facebook, you can do that. We'll get to those. We've been doing a good job getting to all those. It's always good when Shanna's here because that helps. She kind of prods me there. But you can do that. You can put your question up on Facebook, or if you're watching on our website at financialissues.org, you can put a question up there as well. So the total GDP numbers came out, and China is sitting out in the worst shape right now. Now, this is a ratio number. It's not a accurate difference. It's just a ratio. China really, really took it on the chin from the pandemic, not because of the pandemic, but because everybody else shut down. So if they did it intentionally, they shot themselves in the foot because they forgot one minor detail. They are 100% dependent on the rest of the world buying their stuff. And the rest of the world was locked in, not buying anything. And it hurt their economy dramatically. And they dumped a lot of money into their debt. The other country that it severely hurt was Japan. And Japan still running about 100 points below China. China very close to 400%. Japan below that. And then the U.S. below Japan. Germany comes in at number 4. So lots of... one of the things that we don't think about like we should is what the pandemic did in all of the aid that governments around the globe needed to put out in order to help the people of their country. And it was an enormous amount of money. It was money that is not likely to be recovered anytime soon. They're not going to get that. And it went right to their bottom line on their debt. So huge, huge concern, huge issue, and hopefully we will get some better numbers. Now, and I would point out that, you know, these numbers are through the end of 2020. So there's 6 months of mounting debt that isn't counted. And this is coming from the Bank of International Settlements. They're supposed to be a bipartisan group. They seem to be, but all they do is financial news, flows of money, derivatives, credit default swaps, those kinds of things. All right, we'll be back right after this.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
All right, 610-363-1110. Rose just asked me a question on Facebook. She said, Dan, I'm a partner, just opened a Fidelity account to begin investing. What does settled cash mean? It just basically means that it's ready to be used. You can invest it. So oftentimes, so I'll give you an example. You sell a stock. If you sell a stock, it immediately shows up in your cash as soon as you do it right away. So you sell it and it shows up in your cash. It really isn't available for you because it generally takes 3 days before it's settled. So not until it's settled, there's a 3-day settlement period, and it's not until it's settled that you can get to it. So if you are in a money market account, then you'll see it show up there in your balance. But if you went to use all of it right away, you probably couldn't do it unless it was a money market account that you sold out of. So if you have one of their money market mutual funds, then that's different. So you can sell that today. Say you want to buy $10,000 of XYZ stock. You can sell 20,000 shares of the money market account, and that'll be available to you the next day. So you can do that. But that's the only thing you can do that with. So hopefully that helps you a little bit. Mark is asking about a preferred stock that was called and settled today. The call day was today. I thought it was going to be Friday, but it would make sense. It's today, the end of the month. So can you suggest a replacement income investor? I would, the only place I would suggest is utilities. I'm going to suggest, Mark, that you're probably already overweighted in utilities, unfortunately. But I think that you got to replace the income. And since you have to replace it, I would consider quickly getting it into some utility stocks. I would say to you, you can, if you'd like, add to one of those utility stocks. I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but if you, there are some new ones that were put on the buy list, like UT33. I think they're paying a pretty good dividend. You can look at diversifying into one of those stocks, and that might be a better thing to do just to keep you diversified. But unfortunately, I think that's your best bet. It's the only thing that is going to get close. The utilities are the only thing that's going to get close to the income that preferred was paying. So that's what I think you're going to have to do, Mark, unfortunately. You have to check that out. Our phone lines are open, 610-363-1110. If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do that. 610-363-1110. It looks like there are an awful lot of people concerned about the infrastructure bill even getting passed and get put through. One of the things that is going to be under consideration is they don't want to do it under reconciliation. I think they want to save that. They're not allowed to do that twice is all. So they don't want to use that option up. They're hoping to get this passed. I think what they'll do what they're going to try to do is get this passed through the normal lines. In other words, give the Republicans what they need in order to compromise to get everybody on board with the bill. And then what they don't get, they will bundle up into another bill. And then if they have to, they'll do that under reconciliation. This way, Biden gets a big win for negotiating, supposedly, this infrastructure bill. So he'll get that win, and it'll be a little wind in his sails. He'll get that, and then they can move on to other things and still have the option to use the reconciliation for some other things. So I would suspect that that's the way it's going to go. I may be wrong about that, but I suspect that's the way it's going to go. Hopefully it does. Caterpillar obviously got a little concerned yesterday over the lack of infrastructure or the negative news on the infrastructure bill, and they weren't real happy with that. It didn't serve them very well, and their stock was down considerably, not enough to jump in and buy it right away, but it's still on my buy list. So it's a long-term hold. It's something you want to look at for sure. I would think so. That we'll get a little bit of a gauge. It is down again this morning as well. So we'll see what happens. But it's probably more about infrastructure than anything. It also could be a statement about the economy and the state of the economy. It could be that as well, and I think it might be. There are more and more people every time I turn around. There's more and more people. There's more people on the news, the financial news, more writers and op-eds in the Wall Street Journals and other places that are talking about this economy and how concerned they are beginning to get. And I'm happy about that because, you know, they're looking after their portfolios and the people that they manage for, do analytics for, but they are concerned. They're still concerned about inflation, and they're concerned about the state of consumers. And the state of consumers is going to be very dependent upon, you know, obviously consumer sentiment, but consumer sentiment is going to be dependent upon the economy opening up. Do they have a job? Can they make more money? Can they get to that job? Are the job openings going to stay somewhat stable so that they can shop and get in the workplace and start making some money? The question is, that happened in 2009. Okay, so in 2009, then what happened towards the end of 2009 and 2010, we started to have, we have plenty of people working, but we had this mentality set in of hunkering down. This hunker down mentality that, you know, I better hold on to what I have. And that's what we saw happen. And I think we're already starting to see some pieces of that happening right now. And I think it's probably the talk about two things, one inflation and one about the resurgence, if there's going to be a resurgence, the Delta virus and something. You know, I heard somebody on the state-run media yesterday, an analyst last night, and, you know, they were going along having a great conversation for a while, and then the commentator asked the analyst, well, are you concerned or do you think people are concerned about the Delta strain and that impacting the economies? And she said, the analyst said, no, we're not concerned about that. We know that it's still, investing is still a long-term play. We believe that herd immunity has set in so many places right now. And we believe that the herd immunity is going to continue to allow the economy to grow, not to mention the fear of death is no longer there anymore with COVID. People aren't concerned. Commentators say, well, there's people dying in India and other places. And she said, yeah, that's because they just haven't received the proper treatments yet. So anyway, her next line from the commentator was, well, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. And that was the end. It was a very, very short interview. It was quite obvious where this analyst was coming from and what camp she was in. And they didn't like that much. And it was pretty obvious. And I thought that was great. But look, the analyst was speaking the truth. Suppose you continue in India as it is, you got to understand that this is, for the people that are dying, it is an incredible shame because it is so unnecessary. It is not necessary for any of these people to die. Sure, there's always going to be one person, you know, here and there that already have some conditions. But the only reason they're dying is because they refuse to give that population any kind of medication whatsoever. I can guarantee you if the prime minister comes down with COVID, there's no way he's going to die. He's going to be on one of the medicines that have proven to have a dramatic impact on healing and destroying this disease. So it is shameful, but if nothing else, the people that are living are going to be a part of that herd immunity that the analyst was talking about, even in some of these third world countries. And I think it's going to be a huge petri dish for everyone to take a long, hard look at a year from now and really determine how to account for the herd immunity. Anyway, we'll be back, 610-363-1110, 610-363-1110, if you want to queue your call. We'll be right back.
We will never compromise our principles and standards. We will never give away our freedom. We will never abandon our belief in God.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM production.
We in America should be grateful to God for the blessings He's given us.
Don't let anyone tell you that America's days are behind her.
We have got to fight for this nation because I believe with all my heart this nation is in fact one nation under God.
Welcome back, 610-363-1110, 610-363-1110. Wow, that bumper music sounds weird to me. It sounds like it's dragging, like it's an old record player where it's moving a little slower than it should. I don't know, it must be the feed I'm getting, because it just sounds like it's in slow-mo. And the last one did too, so I don't know. It must be my feed.
Dan, anyway. You know, that always happens to me when I'm tired. When I feel tired, music sounds slower. I'm not
really?
Sure why.
Okay,
I don't know if maybe you're feeling tired.
Well, I feel tired like every day of my life, so I can't tell.
So, there you go.
All right. Well, we got FISM News coming up with Ian Patrick. Of course, I remind you again, FISM.TV. FISM.TV. Man, you got to check it all day. I try to tell people, minimize it. Have it at the bottom of your screen so you can kind of catch up with what is going on. We're really excited about what's happening. Great news report last night, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 o'clock, FISM.TV. You can see a half-hour news, and won't be too long before we're every evening, and hopefully that'll be your spot to get the truth and news from a little different viewpoint, to say the least, than you might get with the state-run media. So we have Ian Patrick here from FISM News. Ian, what do you got?
Well, Dan, first of all, I sympathize with being really tired. I didn't hear the music slowing down or anything, but I feel the tiredness. I understand that aspect of it.
You're not really tired unless you hear the music.
That's
dragon,
true. So. Yeah, I must not have. I haven't reached that threshold yet.
Right. But, you know, that's right.
I'll probably get there one day. So I just wanted to touch on a couple things. The first thing I wanted to touch on was actually something we did talk about in the news yesterday. I found it to be very fascinating. A study recently presented at Tel Aviv University shows that young evangelicals' support for Israel is dropping. In 2018, 69% of evangelicals ages 18 to 29 in America supported the nation, supported the nation of Israel, that is. But in 2021, that number dwindles to 33.6%, which is an over 30% drop in those 3 years.
Wow. Yeah.
The study also found that this demographic is typically more keen to show support for Palestinians, with 44.7% of those who were surveyed wanting to establish an official Palestinian state today, compared to 35% back in 2018, which is a just about 10% increase.
Well, now, you know, that's a testimony
yeah.
to propaganda. I mean, if you don't think it works, if you don't think hearing something over and over and over again, like Israelis or occupiers, if you don't think it works, that's a testimony to it works, at least with young people. And so the left, again, making headway. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. Mike Pompeo, when he was at NRB, actually talked about how when he was in his position as Secretary of State, he removed a lot of the language in official government documents that still that still called Israel an occupying state or an occupying people. And he tried to push that notion that Israel is, in fact, a nation and that we have to respect the sovereignty of that. So interesting number, going back to the younger evangelicals, the majority still thinks that Jerusalem should remain Israel's capital at 71.6%, and 28.4% of those interviewed think that Jerusalem should be the Palestinian capital. So it sounds like they don't want Jerusalem to go to the Palestinians. It sounds like they just want a Palestinian state. But obviously, knowing the conflict between Palestine and Israel, it's Palestine doesn't want to exist unless they have pretty much all of Israel. So that wouldn't really work out too well. But interestingly, one of the study's co-authors assumed that one of the reasons for the shift, by the way, they did find that there were more Democrats surveyed than Republicans of these evangelicals, right? And one of the study's co-authors assumed that President Trump was a determining factor for this shift, saying that opposing Trump would be sort of like a rebellion for the younger demographic. So it was sort of like cool to go against, you know, what the older demographic or maybe their parents or grandparents were doing in supporting Trump. So interesting stuff there, and we're continuing to look into that. Some other news for you, some other headlines. The Supreme Court, in a 5-4 vote, rejected an emergency request from landlords seeking to end the CDC's eviction moratorium enacted in September of this year. It's supposed to run out by the end of July, next July, and it prohibits landlords from evicting tenants who could not pay rent due to the financial crisis caused by lockdowns. Justice Kavanaugh said the case was refused because the rule ends in the near future, even though Justices Alito, Gorsuch, Barrett, and Thomas indicated that they would have lifted the ban and would have heard the case. But the other five justices sided in rejecting the request. Other news to discuss, e-cigarette maker Juul Labs has agreed to pay $40 million to North Carolina in order to settle a lawsuit by the state accusing it of marketing its products to minors. The deal also includes restrictions on sales of products that appeal to minors and requires Juul to produce yearly reports demonstrating its compliance. And then the final bit of news I just want to touch on is that 45th President Donald Trump is going to be taking his trip to the U.S. southern border today at the request of Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Trump is going to an unfinished section of border wall near West Laco at the southern tip of Texas, and this will be his second public appearance after his rally in Ohio, and he will likely continue to attack Biden and highlight the problems caused by revoking many of Trump's border policies.
Well, that's going to be an interesting trip.
Yeah, it certainly will, yeah. We're keeping our eyes on that one.
I don't know who's going to cover it, but it won't be the state-run media won't cover it, that's for sure.
They won't cover it correctly at the very least.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Thanks, Ian. I sure appreciate it.
Thank
Ian
you,
Patrick, FISM News, FISM.TV/news, or go to FISM.TV and click on the news tab. Here's Craig Haggard with our Ag Report. We'll be back after that.
This is Craig Haggard with your Financial Issues Ag Update for June 30th. Well, I want to start out with a reminder this morning that the U.S. Stocks and Acreage Report is due out at 11 a.m. Chicago time today, and it could be a real barn burner. We'll have full details on the report in tomorrow's update. Well, yesterday's corn market featured a tug of war between an extended forecast, which is trending wetter for the Western Corn Belt, versus Monday afternoon's lower than expected good to excellent ratings. Now, today's report is expected to show that 93.8 million acres of corn were planted this year, and that's up from the $91.14 million that were projected in the March report. America's farmers planted 89.7 million acres a year ago. Stocks are also expected to show much tighter numbers than the same report gave us last year, which makes sense given the inverses in the market and the strong demand for corn. Soybean futures had small gains in the old crop futures and were slightly weaker in the new crop futures in yesterday's trade. Today's report is expected to show that 88.96 million acres of beans were planted this year. That's up from the 87.6 million that were projected in the March report. Traders are estimating that the June 1st soybean stocks number will come in at 787 million bushels. That's down fairly significantly from the 1,381 million bushels that we had in this report just 1 year ago. We'd had a pretty interesting session yesterday with Minneapolis futures putting in a new life of contract high before selling off, and in fact ended up posting a key reversal lower for the day on the basis charts. Normally when we see this formation, we would expect to see additional selling pressure hit the Minneapolis futures. However, the issues in U.S. spring wheat areas are not subsiding anytime soon, and that should be supportive. Triple-digit temperatures continue to fry any crops left in the Pacific Northwest region of the U.S., and Canadian prairies are also feeling the heat, with the canola crop being threatened right now. Stats Can is reporting that spring wheat acres in Canada are down to 23.4 million acres versus 25 million planted a year ago. Cotton futures were a mixed bag, with the old crop months lower and new crop higher. At the close, we had December futures up 15 points, closing at 87.58. Livestock futures were all stronger yesterday. At the close, we had August live cattle 32.5 cents higher, while August feeder cattle were up a buck and a nickel at the closing bell. Lean hog futures also had a positive outing, with July futures finishing 40 cents higher for the day. Class 3 milk futures continued their bounce higher. At the close, July futures were up 19 points, settling at $16.97. And meat cutout values were all weaker yesterday. Choice box beef continued to drop rapidly as they ended up down $5.09, ending the day at $2.92.34. Select boxes were down $3.56, settling at $2.70.40. Pork carcass cutout values also sold off, closing down 91 cents, ending the session at $114.22 per hundredweight. This has been Craig Haugard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. We'll be right back with more financial issues after this.
If you want to queue your call, you're welcome to do that. 610-363-1110. Let me go to phones. Let me go to Vincent. Vincent's calling from Florida. Hey, Vincent.
Can you hear me?
Yep, gotcha.
Yes. Yeah, I got a question. I've got two questions. One, my wife and myself, we tried to refinance our home here in Florida. So I look for your advice. It's better 30 years or 20 years refinance term?
Well, it would be better to do 20 years. The payment will be a little higher, but I think that the shorter term you can do it with, you're going to get a lower interest rate, number one. So you're going to pay very little interest rate if you go for 20 years. And I think that, you know, that's definitely a better way to go, Vincent. I wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I got the answer for that. Thank you. But I got another question.
Okay.
We got luck with timeshare here in Florida. I never use it. We want to sell. We want to get off of this. How can you help me suggest any lawyer, honest lawyer that I can help me out, you know?
Yeah. No, I can't. I don't know anybody that it's a very difficult thing to get out from under. There are organizations that can help you out of that, that's all they do. And the only thing I can say to you, if they want any money, even $5, doesn't matter. If they want any money up front, don't do it. But there are a couple reputable, too, I know, and I don't know the names of them, unfortunately. And neither one of them require any money up front. You don't give them anything until after it's gone. And they can take care of that for you. But it's really been hard, but these two organizations are doing a great job at it, and that's all I've heard.
Do you have any phone number?
I don't. I don't know. Okay. Yeah, unfortunately, okay. I don't. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, thanks, Vincent.
And keep going. That's good. The best program ever here.
Oh, thank you, Vincent. I appreciate you saying that. Thank you so much.
You.
God bless.
God bless you.
Yeah.
You too.
All right. Let me go to Dudley in Arkansas. Hey, Dudley.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
My question is, I got on to that nationaldebtclock.org.
Yeah.
And this is like 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and I'm looking at taxes received and then interest paid. And at that time, we paid more in interest than we received in revenue. Okay, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, one base point. If the interest rates go up one base point, that's billions of dollars added into the debt. Because all we're doing is going deeper in the hole, and they're not slowing down. And they're going to balance. They're going to finally get around to the deficit in 2050 when every one of them up there is probably going to be dead. What kind of joke are they trying to pull?
It is not even the joke is that they believe that you and I and everybody in their base is just stupid. That's the joke. That's what they think. They think they can say whatever they want. Listen, I've been talking about this for a long time. And one of the things that I've been saying for a long time is everybody's talking about the Federal Reserve and they're going to raise rates. They can not raise rates too much, if at all. The Treasury Department is on them like you can't imagine not to raise rates. Because if they get rates anywhere near normalized is 3.5%, 4%. If they get anywhere near that, we're going to be paying $1 trillion a year to service our debt. Right now, we're paying somewhere around $600 billion, but it's not going to take long to get to $1 trillion. You know, in Japan, the government, their number one expense for the government is interest on their debt. They have so much debt. It's more than the national defense system. It's more than anything. It's the number one thing. That's where we're headed. And you try to pay down your debt when you're adding $1 trillion just in interest and you're still spending money like there's no tomorrow and you got plenty of money to spend. That's exactly what's happening. Eventually, there's got to be a bankruptcy. Eventually.
One thing about the Japanese, it's mostly self-contained to the Japanese. Our debt is everywhere.
Well, it doesn't matter where it is in the sense that if you default on, I mean, it's our biggest debt holder is the Federal Reserve. So they have about $4.5 trillion worth of our debt. Maybe 6 trillion by now. So they're our biggest debt holder. China is next at 1.1 trillion. That's never going up. They're not going to buy anymore. And Japan is just under that at about almost a trillion. So they're our largest debt, but it doesn't matter who's holding it, because yes, would it impact those countries if there were bankruptcies? Sure it would. But do we really care? Because if we do that, we're going to be bankrupt and we're going to have a far bigger problem than to deal with than we can even imagine. So it's going to be kind of, I don't want to say irrelevant. We don't want to create issues anywhere, but The fact of the matter is, they should have thought twice before they bought our debt, and there's not a lot we can do about it. So it is going to be it'd be a huge problem. There is nobody doing anything about it. We keep spending more and more money. We talk about $1 trillion like it's nothing. It's an enormous amount of money, more money that's even it's not even imaginable how much $1 trillion is. $1 billion is almost unimaginable. And we toss around $1 trillion, $1 billion, $1 billion, 1 million billion. That's a lot of money. And we toss around, we toss that around like it's nothing now. And nobody cares because everybody's thinking, I'll be out of office before we go bankrupt. I don't have to fix anything. I just got to worry about staying in office. It is a huge problem. And I'll tell you, by the looks of things, we're never going to do anything about it because we're never going to be able to vote to do anything about it. If they continue to change the voting laws, none of it's going to matter. Because we're not going to be able to fix it. Because the only thing that we have going for us is the vote. Now, we can step in anytime we want and overthrow tyranny in the government. Government that is destroying America from within, which I think we're already there. We can go in and over. We have the rights to do that within our Constitution. So we can do that anytime we want. But will we? I don't know. It's going to be hard to do it if the military's on the government side, not on our side. So we keep digging this hole deeper and deeper, and nobody cares. You care. I care. I mean, there's a lot of people that care, but not enough people to do anything about it. And it doesn't matter because there's nothing we can do because our representatives who we pay their salary don't represent us. They don't care a lick about what we want. They work for us. They represent us and our wishes, not their wishes. It's not what they're there for. They're there to represent what we want. That's why we don't have, you know, we don't have a democracy. This isn't a democratic society in the sense that we don't have to go to vote to the voting booth every week to vote on a bill. We put representatives that represent our viewpoints to do that for us. So
the republic,
we have a republic. And so they're not doing it. They're not doing it. And what do? We reelect them. They haven't done anything. Well, let's reelect them. That's what we do.
Can I ask you two more questions?
Sure.
Okay. One is, what if nobody wants to buy our debt?
Well, no,
and
listen.
Then number two.
Yeah. Nobody's buying it now. Go ahead.
Okay. Number two is, how to fight inflation without raising interest rates?
Well, you can't fight inflation without raising interest rates because you need a stronger dollar. And the only thing that has saved us is the dollar growing in strength because everybody else's currency is growing weaker. And so we're rising to the top, and that is helping us. Nobody is buying our debt now, not because they don't want our debt, because they can't afford to buy it. Everybody's in recession. They're not buying our debt. What they're doing is they're buying their own debt. They're all taking their cues from the Federal Reserve, and they're buying their own debt because that's where they have to spend their money. And that's exactly what we're doing. The Federal Reserve, though, is buying our debt. And they're going to always buy our debt. And they're going to have debt that's insurmountable. I think it already is, because I think they have about $14 trillion worth of debt, not just our debt, but other debt in general that they've had back from 2008. So then we throw the trillions they're buying. They're buying $1.2 billion every single month. Every 9 months, they've added $1 trillion to their balance sheet. And they can't stop. The Treasury Department's not going to let them stop. They can't. We need to print money. and we can't monetize it unless somebody buys it, and the Federal Reserve is the organization that's buying it. So it is, and everybody else is doing the same. It's all going to collapse. The house of cards will come down. I just don't know when. That's it, brother.
Try to get back with you some other time. Hey, thank you very much, friend.
All right, you're welcome. Good stuff. Yeah, it's really frustrating, folks, you think about all these things. I mean, it's very, very frustrating. I don't care about any of it. I care about nobody doing anything about it. That's what I care about. And we're not seeing anybody even hinting that we need to do something. We'll be back. All right, 610-363-1110, 610-363-1110. If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do it. 610-363-1110. So the indices are down right now, all of them, not a lot, but they're in negative territory. So things are turning a little bit negative. We'll see what happens here, of course, at the end of the day. All right, let me go back to phones and go to Noah. Noah's calling from Arkansas. Hi, Noah.
Hello, Dan. I had a couple of questions. First, I just started investing into my company's 401k. We do a simple IRA. I'm investing about 3% of my check right now, and they match 100% of my check. But my question was that, or they may match 100% of what I put in. My right. question was, though, that we use Edward Jones for our investing, mm-hmm. and I was wanting to know, is that a biblical company that I need to continue with, or do I need to stop investing into that company?
So Edward Jones is not the issue. It's what they put your money into. So if they let you pick whatever you want, you can be biblically responsible. I doubt that they let you do that. You have a menu of options.
We have a manager that invests for us.
Yeah, and I would suspect that they're not biblically responsible. They don't like biblically responsible. It's not a part of their, as a matter of fact, they despise it. So I would suspect that you're not able to be biblically responsible in those funds. There should be a published menu that you should have saying what you can be in. And your company would be well served to understand that they hold all the liability for what this manager is doing. And they should have approved some sort of menu of options before they just, I hope they're not just letting them manager do whatever he wants, and everybody's account is different depending upon what funds were offering incentives that month. So I hope that's not what the company is doing. That would be incredibly irresponsible of them, but maybe it is. So I would suggest to the company before you do anything, not the company, Edward Jones, that you would like, if they're doing that and they don't have a menu of options, then you need to see the menu of options and should ask them, what options do I have to pick from? If they say we don't have one, then I would say I would like my money in, you know, TPLC, TPHD, TPSC. I'd like my money in ETFs. They will say, well, no, we can't do that. We're not going to do that. We're not able to do it is probably what they'll say, which is wrong, but that's probably what they'll say. So, but I would at least try because you never know. So I would try if that's the case, that would be great. Or if they give you a menu of options, by chance, there may be something like a government bond fund on that list that you could put at least what they match. So if they match up to 3%, you could at least put the 3% in that bond fund and then open up something on the outside on your own for any monies that you can put in more than that so that you can be biblically responsible.
Okay. And my second question was that there's a small advisor in my hometown that I live in El Dorado, Arkansas. And his name is Greg Harrison. He works with Ameriprise Financial, and I just started investing a small amount, because it's all I could afford right now, into an Israeli oil company called Delek. Do you know anything about that company?
I do know the company. It's risky. It's very risky. They would not be biblically responsible. Maybe they are now. Okay. I don't know, but I don't think they would be. But yeah, I know the company. But that's a very speculative investment. Don't know if that's something that you ought to be doing, but that's up to you, of course. But
so maybe I need to change my money there.
Yeah, and they do a lot of annuities too. So be careful. You don't want to get into an annuity. Into an annuity IRA or an annuity investment. You don't want to do that. That's not the right thing to do. So be careful of that.
Okay. What other companies would you advise me to invest into other than, because I'm trying to stay in energy and different things like that, and maybe some metals or whatever. What would you advise me to look into?
Well, I would just I would advise you to look at our buy list and look at the energy sector and look at the metals or speculative. I mean, there's plenty of things on there, and I would tell you to look in there. I mean, the energy sector has had a really good run this year. But there's plenty of companies, individual stocks that you can buy that will help you out a lot. How old are you?
I just turned 29.
Yeah, so you'll want to be fairly aggressive, and if you don't want to think about individual stocks too much, then I would do an ETF TPLC. Which is a large cap growth, and TPSC, which is small cap, and TPIF, which is an international company, and that would give you a very aggressive portfolio, probably something you do really well on the next 10 years or beyond. Obviously, you're going to go a lot longer than that, but I would just be careful. But you can check out the buy list if you want to hone it in on certain sectors, like you mentioned. If you want to get into oil companies, you want to get into energy side of things, and you want to look at energy sector, then I would suggest you look at the buy list.
Okay, thank you.
All right, no, thank you. Let me go to Richard calling us from Texas. Oh, Lewis in Florida. Hey, Lewis.
Hey, morning. God bless.
Thank you.
Look, I was listening earlier, and we've got a call on a preferred that's probably going to take place today, and I'm trying to replace it with something because I'm a partner and an income investor.
Okay.
And I heard the comment on UT33.
Yes.
Okay, let me throw something by you. I've got another utility It's FP. No, no, it's UT-74.
Uh huh.
And I've got a cost base that's lower. It's about $5 lower than what it is now. And I'm just wondering if would it be to my advantage to get a to take what I'm going to get out of preferred and just put it into that UT-74 to bring my cost base down.
Yeah, I think it would be. Yeah. You have higher cost basis than what it's selling for today.
Yes.
So I think it would be a good thing to do. They're very they're going to be a very dependable company as far as, you know, paying that dividend. And I think it would be a great company to accumulate some more shares in. So, yeah, I think that would be a good place to put it.
But good. That was my thought and all. And I follow your line of thought, and they coincide a little bit. Every now and then they get out of whack.
But, yeah, well, that's good. Well, you, that has to happen every once in a while, that's for sure.
Two great minds are better than one, so you know.
Yeah, there you go. You got it. Yeah. I think that's good, Lewis. The only thing if I had to say one thing bad would be you don't want to have. Do you have other utilities?
Yes, I've
okay.
Got,
good.
Yeah. Okay. I've got some more.
Okay, that's good. As long as you're diversified, you know.
Yeah, I looked at 33, and 33 is kind of unique. But I just was going to try to get my cost base. Just good to look at it on paper. The dividend is going to be the same on the shares. It doesn't.
Right, doesn't matter. Yeah. But you get to accumulate more shares, less expensive now than you have, and that's a good thing. So yeah,
right.
I think
right.
You ought to do it. Yep.
That's what my. All right, I appreciate you. Keep up the good works.
I'll do it. Thank you, Lewis. I appreciate your partnership. God bless. Yeah, good stuff. But yeah, that's the only thing I'm always concerned about, folks, is that we don't accumulate too many. You can't just have one position in a sector and then keep adding to it, you know, at some point in time. That wasn't the case for Lewis. He had others. That's all I was checking and caring about. All right, we'll be back right after this. 610-363-1110. We'll be back right after this.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Six ten three six three 1110. If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do it. Let me go to Mike. Mike's calling us from Louisiana. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Dan. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Hey, I got a question. You talking to a fella yesterday that was 70 years old, worked all his life. He had like $700,000 in his portfolio, I guess. And he was Social Security, Medicare, I think he said. You remember the fella that I was talking about?
Yes.
And you told he had to take like required money, whatever you call that. But you told him if something he would lose Social Security or it wouldn't go, he wouldn't get the same amount of Social Security.
I was telling him to check when he takes the. He was moving money out of his IRA into an investment account, so it was going to be counted to him as income. So what I was saying to him is, make sure that you stay under the threshold for Medicare Part B. So you have to pay for Medicare Part B if you make a certain amount of money. And if you, and it goes up, the more money you make, the monthly payment goes up. So I was saying to him, he probably should make sure that he checks that Medicare Part B, and also make sure he's not, is he going to be taking too much, although I probably didn't care much about that, that was going to force him to pay taxes on his Social Security.
It's a shame that he worked all his life, saved all this money, done everything right, finally got made it to the age to where he could, you know, accept some of this stuff, and now he's going to get penalized.
Yeah, it is, and it's only going to get worse. So anybody that is listening that hasn't started collecting Social Security and Medicare yet, it's only going to get worse. It isn't going to get any better. And they're the kinds of things that if there are people listening, and I'm sure there are, the majority of people probably still working, still thinking about Social Security and all that. I'm not in the camp that Social Security is going to go away. I don't think it is. I don't think it will. But, you know, these kinds of rules that I was talking about yesterday are going to get worse. They're not going to get better. So, you know, it is a shame that you work all your life. You not only did he have that savings, he also was putting in money to Social Security, right? Every payday,
right,
all his life, like all of us do. And now you've got to be concerned, you know, about how much you take and how you take it and all those kinds of things. It is a shame. And, you know, but it, you know, it's one of those things that is never, it's not going to change other than it's going to get worse.
Yeah. I mean, it's our money that we give to them, and then they dictate how we're going to get it, how much we're going to get it. It's not right.
Yeah. Yeah, it isn't, but, you know.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I'm saying. I mean, I
yes, sir.
I agree with you 100%. I just, you know, it's one of those things where if there was something we could do, man, I would sure be talking about it. But
yes,
it's just
sir.
One of those things, you know. Yeah, it's horrible.
Well,
but
I
get your point, though, and I appreciate you weighing in, Mike.
Yeah, I've been a partner for a little over a year now, so thank you very much, man.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for partnering.
Thank you. Have a great
All right.
Have a great day.
God bless. Thank you. It's always frustrating when you don't, you know, you get one of those questions you just, you agree with, you just can't, you wish there's something you could do about it, you know, it's just nothing. All right, let me just look at the clock here. Okay. Let me go to Carrie in Mississippi. Hey, Carrie. Carrie? All right, Carrie must have dropped. All right, let me go to John in Florida. Hey, John.
Hey, Dan. How are you doing today?
Good.
Hey, quick question for you. So I've been a partner. I've been listening to you on a regular basis, and I want to open a stock account for my children. They vary in age. There's four. They're 18 all the way down to 12. And so I just wanted to know, I have a Fidelity brokerage account, and I just wanted to start throwing some money into it. What stocks would be good for them for the long haul?
So you're talking about money that they might use someday when they get married or buy a house or something like that, or you're thinking about
yes,
the retirement? Okay.
Yeah, I am. I'm going to give it to them when they're a bit older, and I keep encouraging them and coaching them that, you know, by the time, you know, there's no, like, I just take a page from your book, there's no secret formula. You have a lot of time in front of you, so let's get this going. And,
amen.
You know, that's the secret to success right there. And so I got the buy-in, and now I just got to show them. I've been dumping money into a 529 plan, but it's not serving us well, so I'm going to take that cash and start feeding it into stocks for them. I think that'll serve them better in the long run.
Yeah, so I would, you can do one of two things. You can divide it, you know, and put different percentages into the ETFs, Timothy ETFs, you can develop a pretty solid portfolio by doing that for them, and then contribute to it when you can the same way, whatever the percentages are. And I think that, I mean, if you look at the past, it would have served very, very well. And I think the future is looking very good for those ETFs. Of course, it's all going to depend upon what happens with the economy. So are they going to have dips when everything dips? Yes. But that's the time to try to contribute more. And, you know, so they're going to go up and down. You know the deal with the stocks. Or you could take the very low end, you know, the 25-year-old asset allocation model and start buying some individual stocks in individual sectors and leaving it alone. So I think that it is either way, that would be the way to go. I would say that it's interesting. Somebody called yesterday and said they were following with 50% of their money the one of my models. And with the other 50%, they left at the old brokerage. And he said that our portfolio that he was following was up 25% higher than the other portfolio that wasn't our strategy. And he said they did okay during the, you know, when things are up. But when they go down, you know, they don't recover as fast and as quickly and as strongly as the individual stocks. That's not because of my picks. It's just the way it is. Because mutual funds can't recover the way individual stocks do, because what happens when things go down, you know what happens, people panic and they get out. So now the manager of the mutual fund's forced to sell certain positions. And then when it recovers back up, they don't own those positions anymore. And it's harder for them to manage and regroup. And so now it's different with ETFs because they don't have that issue. But it is, you know, I think that would be a good plan if you feel as though they're going to be in there. Like, I'm worried about the 18-year-old. So the 18-year-old, you know, is going to have life-changing events sooner than the younger ones. You know, maybe graduating from school, going into the workforce, maybe having to move to a different apartment or an apartment, or move out of state or move out of county or buy a house or get married or whatever. You know, they're going to have more things that are going to come up that it might be nice to have that money to give them a jump start. So that's all I think about. But I think either one of those plans, the ETF plan or the end of July, first week of August, I'm going to have an ETF portfolio, some ETF portfolios. I'm waiting for two ETFs to come out. They're due out the end of July. And then we're going to develop some asset allocation models for them. So a little bit different than how we do it now, but that's what's going to happen. So because we're specifically named where they want to go in. But I think you go with either one of those, the ETFs. You know the system with the individual stocks and all those kinds of things. So I wouldn't be opposed to that at all. And I'd pick one of the younger. If you say, well, I don't want to be that aggressive, then go with the 55 to 65 portfolio. But I think that's what you ought to do, one or the other.
Yeah, I think it's a good solid plan. I guess while I hear the music, can you hold me over? I just have to
play. Sure. Yeah, I'll put you on hold. Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. I hope you'll stay with us. If you gotta leave us, I hope you have a wonderful day. I hope you'll be back with us tomorrow. Next week, a short week. Just gotta get over this hump day. More financial issues right after this.
Jesus said, go sell all that you have, give it to the poor, take up the cross, follow me. It's not your money I want your heart.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM production.